And welcome into this Saturday night between now and midnight. It's a night for you to expand a little, open your mind a little. And I can think of no one to help you open your mind a little, or perhaps a lot, as she has mine, as our guest tonight. And we're so very, very delighted to have her with us. The author of On a Slide of Light, and the author of a lot of things that'll bring light into your life, Greta Woodrow. Greta, welcome to Open Mind.
Thank you, Bill. From the sunny south, we're looking for 8 inches of snow.
Oh, my goodness. There, what, North Carolina where you are, right?
That's right.
Up there on Rabbit Skin Road.
You've got it.
Well, next week you'll be in a warmer clime.
That's right, and with you.
That's right. That's what's going to be warm. I don't know what the weather is like, but we'll be warm. We should have a good time. And where is the scribe?
The scribe is right here.
The scribe is right here, Bill. Good evening, and welcome to Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, listen, is it Super Bowling out here? That is Dick Smolo on the other side, and we'll explain the relationship. Well, I guess we can say that Greta and Dick are man and wife.
I hope so. We lived together for 35 years.
Well, that's good enough for us. on the other thing, what is so interesting about these people, and I want to share this with the audience. It's been a while, Greta, since you have been on with us, about a year or so. What caught my attention was the book that Greta wrote called On a Slide of Light. These two people that we have on the telephone, and you're going to get a chance to experience tonight, were both themselves very successful people. Not that they aren't now, but I mean they were in the successful conventional world. As Dick was in the manufacturing business of clothes and things, Greta was an executive, well, I guess we can call you a headhunter or something, Greta. Right?
That's what they said.
Just doing very, very well. And then something very astounding happened in their life, happened to Greta. Greta all at once realized that something she had never heard of was happening to her. And that's what we call that good old-fashioned psychic ability, I guess. Is that a way to put it, Greta?
Well, I guess so. I think I'd prefer to just say I'm a sensitive, Bill.
A sensitive. This put Greta on an odyssey, different but not unlike what Shirley MacLaine went through, which found her in the laboratory of Dr. Andrea Paharich, our good friend, up in New York. And you found out some strange things about yourself, didn't you, Greta?
Well, I found out that I was what Andrea called a channel, a word I had never heard about 11 years ago, and which today, of course, is a very popular word.
Oh, it's a biggie now.
Yes, it is. But when it happened to me, I'm afraid nobody knew much about channeling, mm-hmm. and they certainly didn't know about the extraterrestrial.
Well, if they did, they only had read Harold's books or, you know, watched movies or something like that. They didn't think of them in a real term as
exactly.
we do.
Exactly.
And do you want to, in your words, put down what channeling is? So, because the word is, well, there may be some people here who don't know what we're talking about when we say channel.
Well, a channel is really a vehicle. I use an automobile analogy. Would you like me to go through that?
Sure. We've got a lot of new people out there.
Sure. Everybody drives a car. And if the car functions properly, well, the performance of the car will be governed by the skills of the driver. You get a high performance, an average performance, or a poor performance. And I ask an audience to visualize this as a mirror image of the human. You have a vehicle, you have a driver, body, mm-hmm. life force. Mm-hmm. And the driver is able to get out of his car when he chooses. Or he can even slide over into the passenger seat. And that's what a channel is. Being either able to get out of the vehicle, body, letting another driver in, or sharing the body with another life force, soul. And I'm fond of saying this is difficult, but not occult. To get the concept of the life force, mind, soul, separate, apart from the physical body. Our big message on channeling is you are not your body. You're just simply not your body. And what you're hearing now from Shirley MacLaine and from Jay-Z Knight is a business of separation of body and soul. Out of your vehicle. And this is what happened to me. And when another passenger came into my car. The passenger happened to have been from another time and space and dimension and galaxy. And that's how I met the Elgato group. This is what On a Slide of Light is about.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, their message was a very strong one of change that would be coming in the two decades that we're now living through. And so our big message now of change, you see, is just ho-hum front page news every day in your magazines and newspapers. When it first came about, we were looked upon as doom and gloomers. Oh, my goodness, all these changes on spaceship planet Earth, and the answer is, oh, yes. And they showed me what would happen. It's what I call their scenario when they said to us, look, despite what man can do to man, despite nature's plan, there are those out here in the cosmos who believe that your planet's worth helping in its time of great adjustment, and there is a golden tomorrow. And based on that, we changed our lives.
You certainly did. Let me back up just a little bit, Greta. You mentioned the Ogatans, and there may be some who may not know who they are. These are a group of...
These are a group of extraterrestrial intelligence.
Are they human beings such as we?
They are not human beings. They are beings.
They are beings.
They are entities, not deities, by the way. I must mention this because I live in fundamentalist North Carolina. They are entities from another time and space and galaxy. And what they have that we don't is advanced technology and a sweetness and a lovingness and an ability, I might add, to see forward and backward. We try to help people spot trends, think and relate to what we're studying so that they can make decisions for a change in their own lives. Based on what the Ogata group showed us and what they told us. And what they showed us wasn't particularly pretty because it was a glimpse of the future that you can't forget when you've seen it, of earthquakes and volcanoes and tidal waves that buried whole cities and supermagnetic storms and floods and so forth. It was a devastation to a beautiful planet, cataclysmic change. But, of course, again, there was that promise that we would experience the brighter tomorrow, and so we address ourselves to that brighter tomorrow, because if indeed mankind is to live through change, we have to recognize that he's weakest in transition, so we must be prepared.
Prepared for the transition?
Nobody is going to, in our scenario, nobody's going to help them or be lifted off anywhere. They're going to have to do it themselves. So we address ourselves to this subject. Dick?
Yeah, I would like to add a couple of words of clarification, if I might, Bill, on the question of channeling. It's a most interesting phenomenon, and it has been getting a tremendous amount of media coverage for obvious reasons. You have a great celebrity like Shirley MacLaine, who has written a book. And
two or three books,
and has made a television special. And then the news media has picked up Jay-Z Knight and chronicled her life, both as Ramtha and as Mrs. Knight. And the one thing I would like to call by way of explanation is they are channeling Mrs. Knight and the channels that Shirley MacLaine uses, Kevin Ryerson, are channeling human beings who are no longer in the physical form. Discarnate humans, if I might say that. They are earthlings. Ramtha is a 35,000-year-old human being, Mrs. Knight says. And the entities that I remember from Shirley MacLaine's show through Kevin Ryerson were a Scotsman of 100 years ago and an Englishman and some very, very charming, discarnate humans. What Greta is channeling, and it is at very sparse intervals, it's not on command, and it's strictly in an educational sense for Greta and for those around us at Star Foundation, are another dimension. They were never humans. They are in a civilization in another solar system around another series of stars, a binary system. These happen to be in another galaxy. But it doesn't matter in the transcendence of space. And I might throw in that our culture in shaping the realities of most of us had no place within this reality for extraterrestrials. Our technology is so new, we're unable to find all of the cosmic bodies within our own system, so we certainly have not been able to find any satellite bodies around distant stars. Although from the Los Angeles Times recently, two astronomers have found a ring of dust that suggests the early stages of planetary formation, so we're fast arriving there, Bill.
The technology is improving, and I think that's because the minds are opening a little bit to the fact that Earth is a local phenomenon. And we can't look for the things that we expect to see all of the time. Question for you, Greta.
Yes.
Why did the Ilgatans pick you? Or did you pick them?
Oh, I did not pick them. I think their purpose in using me as a channel was simply as a communicator to make as many people as possible aware of the changes occurring on this planet that are going to disrupt life as we live it today. And in order to be prepared, one has to know the signs to look for. And that's where I think I have had some strength in addressing people around the globe.
Was it because you were sensitive that they were able to reach you? Were they trying to reach sensitives everywhere and you just happened to tap in? Or had they picked you out specifically?
Well, they had picked me specifically, as they pick all of their channels.
Mm-hmm.
They say they pick their channels carefully, and there are many, many.
According to our mutual friend, Dr. Buharich, Bill,
mm-hmm.
there are literally hundreds of thousands of possible communicants on the planet from different civilizations. It's just a matter of being able to turn them on and communicate with them. And that was how Dr. Buharich's work opened up the possibilities of Greta's communication with the Ilgata group. I'm sure you discussed that with Andrea when he was on your program, did you?
We certainly have, and we'll be with Andrea in 2 weeks out at the Whole Life Expo, and I would imagine there will be some questions that will be addressed to him about it.
Wonderful.
And he freely talks about Greta and the amazing abilities that she has. May I tell a story about you?
You can't do anything wrong in my book.
All right. I have a fascinating story about the first time that I met Greta Woodrue and Nick Schmollo, which I'll share with you in just a moment on Talk Radio 79, KABC. The first time I met Greta, well, I read the book on A Slide of Light, and there were some things in it about the moon, as I recall, that fascinated me. All of the strange things that are going on the moon and that are there that we're not told about. She wrote about it in the book. Contacted her, she came out here, and we were having lunch over at Brickwood. And she looked up at this vase of flowers and just motioned to the flowers. And the flowers seemingly wanted to jump out of the vase. And she says, anybody can do that if you can get your system down to 7.85 hertz or whatever it was there then. But a little bit later, there was a word that you wanted to see if I could figure out what it meant. And I remember I borrowed a pen from the waiter, got a napkin, and wrote the word that you gave me. And I'll never forget the word, guys. Lahura, right?
That's right.
And, well, you wanted to find out if I could figure out what that word meant. It was a word that had been given to you by the Ilgatans. And I did get it right. It meant exuberant greeting. And I opened up the paper to look at the word again, and it was gone. It wasn't on the paper at all. There wasn't even an imprint on the paper where the pen had written on that soft napkin.
That was an attention getter, Bill.
It did get my attention.
You know, when you opened the program, you said to me you're a psychic, and I said I'd rather be called a sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Let me comment on that, if I may, because we also talked about being a channel.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, being a sensitive means being sensitive to frequencies and radiations, you know, that bombard us from all directions, from all people, from all things. So what I am is more sensitive, perhaps, than many others to these frequencies. And most of these radiations, you see, are outside the range of the five, quote, unquote, normal senses. And all of us receive them.
Mm-hmm.
All of the time. It's just a matter of tuning into them. And I do this, as do many other sensitives, maybe a little more easily than the average, but then again, I practice. You know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? When you can communicate as a sensitive, you can get to the heart of a flower. And that's exactly what happened that night. But then, too, we talk about being a channel, a vehicle, providing a body, a facility through which other beings from other parts of the universe can communicate. And I think that people have to come to grips with the concept that one has a life force separate, apart from the physical, and that one is capable of lending or sharing the body with another life force. And it's something that I do as regularly as brushing my hair. And I don't view it as extraordinary because it's just a part and parcel of my almost daily existence, and it's my experienced reality. But there is a difference between being a psychic or sensitive and being a channel. I didn't ask to be any of the above.
Yeah, you were doing okay the way you were.
I was doing just fine, Bill.
And this has created some problems. You've had to move. You've moved to this beautiful facility in North Carolina, but you moved there for a very specific reason, and it took you a long time to find it.
Well, you know, when you say problems, I remember when I do a lecture, I always quote the philosopher Schopenhauer because he said this so well. He said, you know, there are three stages in the revelation of any truth. First, it's ridiculed. Second, resisted. And the third, it's considered self-evident. Well, the 10 years we went through the ridicule, and we watched and are still watching resistance. You know, people seek change and then they resist it. But now, by golly, change is becoming self-evident. And that made it all worthwhile now, didn't it? Because over these years of our job of talking about change, these changes have already begun and they're very, very visible. They are the headlines. You know, what was heresy when we started to speak out about change is now being put into the realm of orthodoxy.
It's a sort of a ho-hum thing going along.
It's a very ho-hum situation. I remember when we first came out to Newport Beach in California, 1977, we talked about changing climatic conditions. We talked about possible earthquakes, possible volcanoes. They thought we were lunatics. Now it's not a question of will it happen. It's just a matter of when and where. They never heard the words plate tectonics 10 years ago when we talked about them. So it has been a very exciting 10 years for us, and we're thrilled to see this happening. You know, the last time I was on, I said, oh, God bless Steven Spielberg. He came out with E.T. and Close Encounters, and here are these words put out in a massive way for people to resonate to. And we've had a small voice just trying to get these words into the cosmos. Well, my goodness, look what's going on. Newsweek and Time and 2020 and the new. It's wonderful. And you don't have to believe or disbelieve or buy this one's story or that one's story or indeed mine. The point is, it's in the consciousness. And that's good.
I think it's wonderful the way you are detailing these things as we go along in the Woodrow Update, the marvelous newsletter you get. It's my favorite piece of mail every week. But you've had a chance to chronicle it as it goes along. You know, what the Yogatans are saying and what actually is happening in the world, plus the input that you're getting from updaters all over the country.
Well, it's...
You're still doing that, aren't you?
It's quite a phenomenon, this update, because we're now in 14 countries abroad and all over the United States and Canada. And it really began because people who heard us speak wanted to keep in touch. So we said, okay, we'll look up to the UFOs and down to the changes in the earth and backwards to old age wisdom and forward to glimpses of the future. And we'll share with you whatever we can. And of course, since we've moved, our research has taken us into so many areas in which Dick has been so splendid. And we do indeed put it all out into the updates, and people do resonate to what we say. Our new one coming up has a headline, Now is the Time. This is a big issue coming up because there are no passengers, as McLuhan said on Spaceship Planet Earth. Everybody is crew, and we'd better know what we're doing.
I want you to do two things for me right now, if you
sure.
Will. Tell me how I can get the Woodrow update, if I'm not already subscribing to it, but I am, but, you know, I want the folks to know, and where they can find out information about your appearance next week here.
Oh, you are so nice. For the Woodrow update, you just write to STAR, S-T-A-R, Foundation, and we have a wonderful address, 448 Rabbit Skin Road, in Waynesville, North Carolina. That's Waynesville, and our zip code is 28786. And because we are a nonprofit organization, this is the way that we operate. You can make out your check for any price you like. Minimum is $30, and it's tax deductible, and we will send you the update for a year for your donation. As for the, and thank you for asking, Bill, we're very proud of our update, I will say. As for the workshop, oh my goodness, we're going to be at the Viscount Hotel right at your airport in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a local number, a 213 number you can call, 935-0891. And one of our wonderful updaters named Dot will take your call and tell you all about it.
Hang on, Dottie. Here it comes.
Yes, indeed. We are really looking forward to this because you are going to be on our panel Sunday.
That's right.
And I know that so many of the people know you only as a voice, and they want to see you in the flesh.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting them.
Oh, gosh, it's going to be wonderful to be together. Now, I know that I didn't give the dates, and it is Saturday and Sunday, the 31st of January and the 1st of February.
A week from today and tomorrow.
Right. We will start sharp 9 o'clock. And we'll go straight through till 5:15 or 5:30. And by the way, our $135 charge includes your lunches and your lunch break, your coffee breaks, and the whole 2 days. It's not a money-making thing. It's price so that people can come.
Well,
so do call that.
I want to give that number one more time, and then we'll give Dottie a chance to catch her breath there at times.
That's 213-935-0891. Thank you, Dot.
Now, one other thing before we get to our callers. There are so many questions, and I'll add them as we go along, but I don't like to keep them away from you too long. When you were channeling, getting your information from the Ogahans, do you remember any of that, or are you truly in a chance?
Okay, I'm so glad you asked that, Bill. There are two ways in which one channels. You are either a passenger in your vehicle, or you get out of your vehicle. Or there's a third way. You can be taken out of your vehicle.
Oh.
And that is with permission, which involves your free will. They have my permission to do as they please with my consciousness when they choose to use my vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, when I was a channel, I was totally unaware of what was going on. Dick would have to tell me, Dr. Buharich would have to tell me, and the scientists would have to tell me. At this point, most of the time, I'm a passenger. I can hear them, I can see them. But I can't talk because they're using my body and my vocal cords.
And this is where the scribe comes in.
And this is where my darling Dick comes in and does the talking. Dick, why don't you explain this?
Well, one of the reasons at the beginning in the incipient stages that Greta was not aware of it was because she was being taken out of her body and being given lessons someplace outside of the pull of planet Earth, along with a group of others, terrestrial beings, earthlings, humans, who were also being trained to be channeled for the Ogata group. So that in the early stages of the channeling, which Andrea brought forth in his laboratory in 1976-77, Greta was more often than not out with the Ogaten people, and those who were filling the channel were there to educate Dick and Andrea as to what the modus operandi would be and what the end result was that they were hoping for. So that the channeling that came through that I recorded and that Andrea recorded, and that we used parts of it on a slide of light, was for our education while Greta was being educated simultaneously.
Greta, do you have any conscious memory of these trips away?
Oh, certainly. But I don't have a conscious memory of what they said while they used my vehicle.
Mm-hmm. But you do have, whenever you're out of the vehicle, let's say. And
most of the time, Bill,
yeah.
Not always.
When you were having these the schooling session that Dick was
talking about. The sessions are very clear.
You do remember those?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Mm.
You know, everybody talks about raising consciousness today and higher consciousness. Can I talk a minute about that?
You got 3 hours, then.
I want to talk about consciousness, sensory perception, and extrasensory perception, because consciousness means so many things to so many people. And I want to give you my definition. To me, consciousness is something like a very small nightlight in a huge dark room. And as the wattage, let's say, of the light bulb is increased, more of the room can be seen in detail. Now, the room never changes, only the observable reality, according to the intensity of the light. And I'm fond of saying the universe is our room. And sensory awareness is the light bulb. The more wattage in the light bulb, awareness, the more of the universe opens up to you. So when people talk about consciousness today, they have to be aware of what it is that consciousness is. The very subjective thing, consciousness.
Seems to me that we are all in a very dark room most of the time under those terms.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that maybe some will go out on a slide of light. You know, life's very exciting right now. You contemplate a golden age just around the turn of the century, and you hope you'll be part of it. My goodness, what can be more exciting? I know that all of our activities here at STAR are geared to helping as many as possible get through that change that we foresee. And it's now. Nobody can make decisions for anyone else. You're the master of your own fate. You make hard decisions for yourself. We're very fond of saying in our family, you know, there are no bad decisions. There are bad results. So make another decision. What's the big deal? Examine these theses of change. We've been broadcasting this, you know, with you since 1981.
Mm-hmm.
In our opinion, the current news and scientific findings all corroborate the scenario of change that was given to us by the Ogata Group. And if any of your audience agrees, then you proceed to what you're going to do about it. If you conclude we're wrong, then at least the decision to consciously continue in your current lifestyle without making preparations is warranted. But at least we say, do yourself a favor. Examine the evidence. We sure lay it out as best we can every other month in our updates. Don't back into an inaction just because it's an easy way out. We tell our people to make positive decisions, hopefully that we're mistaken and that everything is going to be wonderful, and we hope we're wrong. But we don't think so. If they agree with that, then the next step is to examine your own situation, the location, the services you depend on, what's going to break down in L.A. This analysis would help you decide on perhaps what you might want to store. You might ask, how long a period you're going to ride out? I mean, is it going to be a day, a week, a month, 3 months? What? Or you have to ask yourself, is it possible that you won't be able to get to a safer, more independent ground quickly? Will you have to provide for even longer, tough decisions? But it's the first decision. I say, take a stand. Decide on your survival posture. And if you need one, implement it. Do you know, we have just completed an underground storage program here at STAR for 100 people for 1 year. People who we suspect will come and go, not stay, to refresh, to refurbish, to learn, and to move along and help someone else. Bill, we've said this on many occasions, you can't ignore personal involvement because that's the first step to panic. Tragedy.
Sure.
And the purpose of a weekend like next weekend, where Greta is coming out to speak on Saturday and on Sunday, Bill, is to give a framework of what the thinking can be within the matrix of change. Everybody must make their own decisions for themselves, for their families, for their lifestyle. But it will be within a changing framework, a framework that is outside of the reality. You call it a reality box. It's outside of the reality box in which we live. And by taking an intensive 2 days and just exposing the participants to the different activities which will be going on simultaneously, it will help them in their thinking to recognize what steps they should take or they would like to take for their own selves and for their families.
That's right. We also say, hey, don't limit yourself to things that are just risk-free. Because if you do, you're probably missing out on the most rewarding adventures of your life. You've got to re-examine your actions and reactions, and that's imperative for growth and for survival. And we are concerned with survival, with food supply, with clothing, with medical supplies. And I'm not talking a doom and gloom scenario. I'm talking
Frank Glendale in Pasadena, that first. At the Philosophical Research Society, that's out at 3910 Los Feliz Boulevard in Los Angeles. Use of color and light can make a difference in your life. Now, this seminar is designed to increase your awareness of the intricate role that light and color play in our emotional and physical makeup. Scientifically proven effective, color can have the ability to heal and stimulate our bodies and repair itself naturally without toxic drugs and other side effects. This New Age therapy can be a viable method of preventative medicine. Hear lectures and slide presentations by Barbara Colby, well-known interior designer who's done studies in the healing properties of color, and Priscilla Dewey, the lecturer on the Brunner color method of healing. Now, if you're interested in holistic and preventative medicine, the effects of color, the visual arts, don't miss this dynamic presentation on January 31st. For more information, call 818-242-8788. That's 818-242-8788. Now, Alexandria 2 Bookstore in Pasadena has a wide selection of motivational books, cassette tapes, and subliminal tapes to help you decide to lose weight or make changes in your life or just enjoy your life the way it is right now. And there are books and tapes to enlighten the mind and the body and the soul, from astral projection to Zen. Also books on dreams and ley lines, UFOs, so much more, even crystals and crystal jewelry. And remember, Alexandria, too, still has the largest selection of metaphysical video rentals and sales. And for a real treat, my good friends Dale Walker and Nick Messerino will be on a panel workshop on crystals. That'll be Monday, February 9th. And learn beginning and intermediate astrology the fun and easy way with famed astrologer Lee Holloway, teaching a 4-lecture series that'll be coming in February. That's Alexandria 2 Bookstore at Colorado and Rosemead in Pasadena. For reservations, call Alexandria 2 at 818-792-7885. That's 818-792-7885. Plans to get out there? I'll have a chance to meet you if you do come out. Here's Robert. Robert, you're on. Yes. Yay.
You hear me?
I got you now.
Okay, hello, Brett and Dick.
Hi, Dave.
First of all, I want to state that I do believe in channeling. Now, this is like a two-part question. I want to ask you a real quick one after this. You have all these people who are attending, these channelers, who set up sessions charging hundreds to thousands of dollars for a certain amount of time. Now, how does someone tell between a real channeler and somebody with a photographic memory who's regurgitating the Seth books? You know, how can you tell these? You know, if this is something, a gift to you, and I believe, you know, you when you say you do it, Greta. A lot of these people, they charge a couple hundred dollars for an hour session. How do you know they haven't picked the time in history, created a character, read Jane Roberts, and now are regurgitating all this to an unsuspecting, believing, maybe sad and depressed people or looking for a truth?
Robert?
Yes.
It could very well be that what you say is so. And I often wonder myself. I don't happen to go to listen to these people, but I know many who do. I can only answer for myself. I never channel for anyone because I can't conjure it up. My goodness, we're not dealing here with disincarnate. We're dealing with an advanced civilization. I can't ask them to come, nor would I ask them to come. I have never asked a personal question, ever, in all the years that I'm dealing with the Ogata group. They come when they choose, and they tell me what they feel we should know and what message we should proliferate. The major message really is, consider awesome possibilities. These are entities from an advanced civilization who have a higher technology than we. I am not capable of conjuring them up or channeling on command in front of a mic in public or for a TV or radio show. I don't do it. So I can't really speak for anyone else. Yes, Dan.
Well, you are the spokesman for them. The message of change is what they wanted to get across. And the participation of over 20-plus civilizations to try and help planet Earth in its transition. Now, Robert, I heard your question, and we appear to have begged it, but it's from lack of knowledge. I'm sure that what you say has some validity, and it will require your being circumspect to weed out that which is true and that which is theatrical.
All right, and I wanted to just a quick one. You mentioned Andrija Puharic. This fellow from Iceland, I read a book that he wrote about Uri Geller, which since has basically been debunked. Now, this man championed Uri Geller. Now, I haven't seen Uri Geller. I'm a fellow countryman of his from Israel. I've been to Israel in the past couple of years, on and off. Ain't heard nothing of him there. Now, since Uri Geller basically has been shown to see, basically debunked, let's say, for example, his thing, look at your watches, it stopped. Well, how many people, you know, actually may have looked at their watches right when the show started? So how do you lend credibility to anything this man, Andrei Pahark, says when he, you know, associated with a man like Geller, who since has been, he wouldn't take tests, he would, you know, hem and haw about.
Oh, my goodness,
you know,
Robert, I don't think you're very well informed on your countrymen. Uri Geller was at SRI for 4 years under Russell Targ and Harold Puthart. He went through every test known to man. He was a very cooperative subject, and he has not been debunked by everyone. He's been debunked by the Randy the Magicians of the world, who make it their business to be negative. I know Uri very well. He's a lovely young man. Has he ever cheated? He certainly has. He was a magician at one time. He was a performer. He regrets it deeply. I have seen him do wonderful things. I have bet metal with him. I have seen watches stop. I defend Uri because I think he's been maligned. Let me tell you, as a former guinea pig of the labs,
okay,
you can go through tests day after day after day with strain gauges and all of this business and be successful 6 days in a row. And if you miss one day, are you aware that you go back to zero? They throw out all the data because it wasn't replicable?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Well, be aware of it. And I don't blame Uri for having finally said, hey, the hell with it. I'm just not going to be bothered in the labs anymore, and I'm going to go out and make money.
But I tell you,
that's exactly what he did.
I have to agree with you, Greta. You talked to Russell Targ, who's quite often a guest on this show, the people at the Stanford Research Institute. In my own hand, my key bent right out of my finger because of Uri Geller. And even our own Michael Jackson right now will tell you that he did some incredible things. And if you've listened to Michael's show, you know that Michael is the skeptic of skeptics comes to this kind of thing.
I'm weary of the whole metal bending thing. You and I have had some wild metal bending together, Bill.
Yes, indeed.
So I know what can be done. But I think that Uri has been sadly maligned. Dr. Buharich brought him to this country and put him on the map. And, you know, I say good for him. He spent a fortune to do it.
And if you're wondering about Andrea, Robert, I want you to go out to the Whole Life Expo in 2 weeks. Andrea will be there. You'll come away a changed man, I'll tell you that.
All right, where can I get a copy of your book, Greta? Who published it?
Star 448 Rabbit Skin. Happy to send it to you.
How much?
We charge $7 for the soft cover and $12 for the hard. There are a little more in the story.
They'll give you all the information if you write them.
Great.
2,300 yen in Japanese.
That's right. We're out in Japanese.
All right. Hey, thank you so much, Greta.
Bill.
Good question, Robert. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bill, before
yes.
we take another one, can I have a moment?
Let me do something first, okay?
Sure.
And then we'll be right now, Greta Woodrow, on Talk Radio 79K.
Expo. Now, the Expo is the largest event of its kind in Southern California, featuring some of the best speakers on holistic, metaphysical, and leading-edge areas. And I'll be hosting a science and metaphysics panel that includes Dr. Andrea Pahorich and Stephen Schwartz, Brad Seiger, Marcel Vogel. The Expo features over 150 speakers, including Nitzhoffen, Kevin Ryerson, Lazarus, Peter Guy Manners, Dale Walker, Walter Gross, Peter Herkos, Bob Beck, Jack Schwartz, Alan Sheedy, and Harley Swiftdeer. Now, this is the place to experience these and many other speakers for a low $15 for the entire three-day event. In addition, the Whole Life Expo features over 200 exhibitors, 75 in-depth workshops, an intuitive art rooms, natural foods dining area. And on Saturday night, February 7th, the Expo will present a special channeling experience, The Future, How We Create It, featuring Kevin Ryerson and Jack Purcell. That's Lazarus, hosted by Joyce DeWitt. For further information, call them at 213-451-1314. That's 451-1314. Got the stand.
When the young man Robert asked about Uri, again, in defense of an Uri Geller, who spends years of his life trying to build up something, and then has people in a skeptical eye tear it down, or Randy tear him down, I wanted to share with your audience something that we put into our update, and it goes like this, if I remember it right. I saw them tearing a building down, a gang of men in a busy town. With a yo, heave-ho, and a lusty yell, they swung a beam and a sidewalk fell. And I asked the foreman, are the men skilled? Skilled as the men you'd hire if you were to build? And he laughed and he said, oh, no, indeed. Common labor is all I need. I can wreck in a day or two what builders have taken years to do. So I asked myself as I went my way, which of these roles have I tried to play? Am I a builder who works with care, who measures life with a rule and a square? Or am I a wrecker who walks the town, content with the labor of tearing down? And I think it's a wonderful little verse, and I don't know who to credit it to. But
well, I'm just going to credit it to you, and I love it.
No, it's not mine. But I memorized it because I love it. And we ran it in one of our updates, you'll remember. And I just... people are so free to criticize that which they do not understand. I myself have no axe to grind. Nobody, you know, nobody can laugh at me because I laugh louder at myself.
I find that some of the most amusing things in the world, and that's just Bill. Okay,
yeah.
We have Renzo on the line. Hi,
okay, Renzo.
Good evening, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, hear you fine.
Okay, I have a question for your guest tonight. Greta, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, Greta, I have a question that just blocks my mind. You're channeling the Ogata group, and evidently they are leaving information to us. And the one thing I just don't understand is how come people from a different solar system can talk to us in English?
Language has no barrier. I have found myself speaking in Switzerdeutsch, in Icelandic, in Spanish, in many languages, none of which I know, certainly in this lifetime. Language is not a barrier. It's the only language, however, that we understand. And so, of course, they speak to us in English.
But we did learn a Ogaten word.
Oh, I have many. I have hundreds and hundreds because we always ask them, how would you give us these words or concepts in Ogaten? In fact, I listed 12 of them in the back of On a Slide of Light, and 8,000 people have responded to these words, trying to puzzle them out through their own meditations. I'm here to tell you that two did it. Only two, but how exciting to have the two.
Well, I know what Luhara means.
Yes, you do, Bill. That answer you, Ranzi. Not really.
Let me throw something in that might clarify. At a meeting in Prague, Czechoslovakia, a Hungarian gentleman was able to telepathize with a Russian gentleman, a Russian sensitive, and neither spoke each other's language, and yet they were able to telepathize their thoughts so that in the transmission of thought, language doesn't play a part.
I can understand that, but they transmit thoughts to Greta, and then Greta is giving them to us. I thought maybe she is somehow, her knowledge of the English language is being used, but now she's telling me that she can also perform in Spanish and some other languages when she is channeling.
I asked the question when we were going to mainland China in 1978, and they had told us that language was mechanical and that it was not anything to switch from one language to the other for an advanced civilization. And I said, how about giving me the ability to communicate in Chinese? And they started to laugh, and they said, there are many other levels of education that you need before you get the mechanics of language. Suffice to say, it's a mechanical technology. That is within the range of their abilities.
Does that help you, Renzo?
No, it certainly does.
All right, thank you very
thank
much.
You, sir.
Okay, thank you, sir.
There's our little orchestra fired up, which means we're going to take a break and pause for the news.
Oh,
at 10 o'clock from ABC, Bill Jenkins, and we're sort of on a slide of lights, and that means that we have with us from North Carolina, from Rabbit's Foot Road. Rabbit's Foot, Rabbit's Skin. There's a little skin on the foot, I guess. Greta Woodrue and her husband, Dick Smolo, who have been touring the world telling the message that Greta has received from a very unusual place. A group of beings that live in a different time, a different place, a different galaxy, but are very concerned about the affairs of planet Earth. They're here to help. And one of the ways of helping is to help us cope with the things that we are going to have to endure before we are really thrust into this golden new age. Would that be one way to put it?
It certainly would. I think the bottom line of their message is simply that this planet is destined for changes on a grand scale. The changes will not happen overnight. They will happen gradually, and those best prepared for the changes will make the smoothest transition, and those who are not prepared simply will not make it.
The newscast we just heard.
Yes.
Big earthquake.
China.
Yes, big earthquake there. Of course, earthquakes are going on all the time, but there seems to be an enormous intensity in them. It's cycling on the upward scale. Volcanic activity is higher. Earthquake activity is higher than it's been in memory, I think.
That's right.
And growing.
And growing. Small ones always presage large ones. That's history.
And, of course, whenever you talk about earthquakes to the people of Los Angeles, you're striking close to our heart.
I hope it's not striking close to your homes.
We do, too. A great deal of effort is being made in this area to cope with what we think will be the inevitable 8-point or better earthquake, which will do a lot of damage, of course. A lot of readiness is underway. Around this radio station, for instance, which will be a very vital link of communications because our transmitter and our towers are all together in our studios, as opposed to most other stations where there's a great distance between the transmitter and the studios.
Well, you know, Bill, Discover Magazine, a part of Time, Inc., ran a cover story entitled Earthquake. Did you see it?
Yes.
It had a very explicit sub-headline which said, there is a 50 to 90% chance that a major quake will devastate Los Angeles in the next 50 years. It could happen in the year 2036. Or it could happen next week.
1987.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
I mean,
But we know that all of the ingredients are there along this major fault line that we have out there. But that's not the only major fault line, and that's not the only thing that can happen. We've seen surf storms. We've even had a little tsunami that didn't quite make it down to Los Angeles. Great earthquakes up in the Aleutians. Earthquakes everywhere.
Every weather pattern is changing. Wherever we go, people start off the sentence with, it's never been as. And then you can fill it in. Hot, cold, wet, dry. We had a drought here that was unprecedented this past spring. Right here in North Carolina.
Now you're having unprecedented cold up in that area.
We're going to get 8 inches of snow tonight. So wherever you go, you see this changing climatic picture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is precisely what they told us in 76. That this would be the trigger that starts these tremendous changes on spaceship planet Earth.
But it isn't all gloom and doom.
Not at all. We have never looked upon it as gloom and doom. Every time there's been change, man has come out better, stronger.
The big change will be in man, you say?
I think so. 90% of the species have gone to extinction, but not man. Man is meant to survive. Bucky Fuller said that, and I believe it. Man is meant to survive.
Just a crafty character, man.
Yes.
You know, evolution is life-oriented. It's not always kind, but after the evolutionary stage, which can be cataclysmic, the species that evolve are of a higher order than previously inhabited the planet. So it is life-oriented, and it is progressive, Bill.
All right, let's go to Kurt. Kurt, you're on.
Hello, Bill. Good evening. Hello, Greta and Dick.
Hi there. Hi,
it's a pleasure speaking with you, and I've just been sitting here listening to you, and you've got my mind blown. It has been said that our science and our technology would suffer tremendously if the truth about UFOs were given. I believe it was Edwin Slade or Larry Fawcett who said that the CIA had said to him that the American public could never stand the truth about UFOs. Have the Ogadens forwarded to you any information?
That's a good question. They speak to us with an Ogaden word. They talk about the coming of the Gatai. The Gatai are the spacecraft. We have been privileged to see their craft twice. I thought I had coined the phrase the Cosmic Watergate back in 77, but I hear that it has been used before. I think there is a cosmic Watergate. I think it began with John Foster Dulles way back when they felt that if the people heard, the people would panic. And fear, of course, is a killer. I don't believe that for a moment. I think that if people are told the truth, they ingest it and they adjust to it. I myself don't get involved too much with the UFO problem because, frankly, most groups are out there to prove they exist.
Mm-hmm.
I know they exist.
Right.
I don't waste my time on it. When I see one, which isn't that often, it's only been twice, I'm awed by them from another time and space. My goodness. But to extrapolate from that, it boggles my mind that when so many, many Americans see these UFOs, they're still confused.
I've seen them at least four times in my life.
Okay, then where is the confusion about those who man them? So they don't look like we do, or they do. What difference?
But we're making progress now, Kurt. I'm sitting now, while you're talking, looking at articles from the Washington Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and the New York Times. And it deals with the incident in over Anchorage, Alaska,
of
the Japanese airline pilot, Captain Taruki.
Oh, yes, fantastic sighting.
Yes, and I'm sure it ran in the Los Angeles papers, but this I want to quote one line from the Philadelphia article here. It tells the whole story, and the tagline at the end is, "It's about time for a close encounter of the truthful kind."
I'm always reminded what Arthur Clarke said. The one fact about the future of which we can be absolutely certain is that it's going to be utterly fantastic.
I was very delighted to see that the Los Angeles Times did run the story up there, and so did the American Broadcasting Company. Ran it for days.
I think that's great, Bill.
I first heard the story on Paul Harvey News.
Really?
And I do have some other information.
Listen, we had traffic backed up, they say, for almost 30 miles 2 years ago when they were having all of these UFO sightings right in a suburb of New York.
That's right, in upstate New York.
Thousands,
we did a whole show on it.
Thousands and thousands of people seeing them. We had quite an experience with two students in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, who told us that one came down, landed. About 2,000 people were there. They greeted them very respectfully with gestures. They were small entities, very gentle-looking creatures who indicated they'd be back, and with great solemnity, they stayed on the ground and then took off. Then, of course, you know what happened in Zimbabwe, so these two people that we met had to move. We met them in Botswana when we were on safari, and they came over to me and told me the story, and they said, and imagine, one was sighted here in Botswana just a month ago. 500 or 600 people gathered to see it and met them with gunfire. They never landed. So do you blame them?
I don't blame them for
that. Happened a few times.
You know, so wherever you go in the world, you hear people who have seen legitimate, unidentifiable flying objects.
But they are being seen by more and more people, and you can't fool
them. You can't deny it.
And to go back to your question, yes, the Ogata Group say we will see more and more of them.
Particularly during the course of this year. I thought it was interesting, too, on the Japanese or the JAL incident in Alaska, that the FAA radar was picking it up also, but only on its every third sweep. And the radar monitor on board the aircraft is a color monitor, but it was showing its readout from the craft in green only.
What was interesting about the FAA report, Bill, was that the first encounter they reported, the second encounter they reported, and the third encounter, they then backed away and said it to be a split image of the Japanese airliner after confirming it as an unidentified
flying object. Right, that was the conclusion they came up with.
Of course, that doesn't really hold too much water. The Air Force got to them, and that's a very sensitive
they
area.
They lied again.
It's a very sensitive area for the Air Force up there. They don't know what they're dealing with. It's right across the way from the Soviet Union. So you can understand the Air Force's reticence to talk other than the fact that they say that they tracked it as well.
Bill, can I just ask Greta one more thing?
Sure.
I've had these series of dreams over a period of about 10 years. And I have the same dream every 6 or 7 months. And I see tremendous winds ash and things falling from the sky on the ground and people screaming and terrible vortex-type hurricane-like winds. I mean, they're coming from the ocean, and they're devouring houses. And I mean, I wake up in a cold sweat. They're so real. It's like I'm right there. And
we'll have to hope that that is not a prophetic dream. You are aware that more brain cells are active in your sleeping state than they are in your waking state. Sometimes it makes you wonder whether you're awake or asleep, doesn't it? But these aren't prophetic dreams. And I must tell you with great sadness that I have heard this dream again and again.
Yes, I have. A few people,
other people
who have been strangers to me, I sat down and had a cup of coffee, and they're telling me the same dream.
May I make a suggestion to you?
Sure.
I wouldn't talk about it again. I'm very large on putting positive thoughts out into the cosmos, if you will.
Right.
And the more that these things are talked about and hyped, I think the more possible it is that we can bring them into fruition. When you think of something as problematic, and most thinking does start with negative connotations, you're putting that negativity out there, and then you have to overcome it before it ever happens. So,
these things don't have to happen.
Sharing it, but I wouldn't share it again.
Remember, a thought is in the virtual state, is a thing, it's energy.
Exactly.
And it can, and has the ability, to bring into being whatever it is that you're thinking.
Well, I'll leave you. I'll certainly not talk about it again. And Greta, bless you. And Dick and Bill, thank you very much.
Let me say one thing. The work done at Maimonides Hospital, a hospital in one of the boroughs in New York City, in their dream labs, has confirmed the fact that in a dream state, you can go forward or backward in time. It is very possible to go into the future.
Well,
you're looking at something in the past.
Well, I think that
Bob Monroe tells us you can do that in the out of body state as well.
Right, you can.
I know I'm a sensitive person myself. You call yourself a sensitive. I know I am, and I've seen UFOs 3 or 4 times in my life, 4 times, and
well, keep looking. Best to look to the stars anyway. Don't you agree?
Oh, I quite agree with you, and I think some fantastic events will take place in the future of a very positive nature,
well,
and I don't believe our scientists can do anything about it.
We hope that you are what the Ogata Group calls an architect of the future.
Well, that's a beautiful thought.
And you got to remember about those UFOs you saw. If you were to talk to any bureaucrat in government, particularly military, they would tell you it was swamp gas.
Well, I think that the public is becoming quite aware and much smarter, and I think that if anything, we will all learn the truth about UFOs, and there's nothing that those people out there can do about it.
There's an interesting thing you can do if you have a personal computer with a modem on it. There's a very valuable service that's located up in Washington State called QFON. That's Computer UFO Network, where you can punch into that and just get one government document after another. Signed by General Twining, signed by George C. Marshall, signed by the J. Edgar Hoover, signed by Air Force Intelligence, CIA, that details specifically what the government of the United States...
A lot of it's crossed out. A lot of the reports are crossed out, and there's 2 words left on some of them.
Oh, yeah, some of them are blanked out, but there's enough information there to say that the government knows all about them.
Yeah.
But they figure that we're all sheep and we're too stupid.
Well, that's right. We figure we'll just kick back, watch the television, and blame the commies for all our problems.
That's right. Listen to the laugh tracks on television and you'll be okay.
Well, okay, Bill, and thank you, Greta and Dick, and it's been a pleasure. And I'll be listening, continuing to listen to the radio.
Thank you, Kurt.
Have a good evening, Bill.
Appreciate you being aboard.
Bye-bye now.
We're 22 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Greta Wood.
Well, what is star, really?
What is star?
Everybody asks this question that took this for... STAR, which stands for Space Technology and Research, and the facilities that we've built are constantly evolving. They're open-ended. For our many STAR supporters, it's sort of an insurance policy, I guess you'd say, against the uncertain future. It's a bastion of security in an isolated setting that's prepared to take them in should a major catastrophe strike their area and they can get here. And when we first started speaking out on this, that appeared kind of unlikely, but now, as you said before, everyone's conscious, for example, of earthquake possibilities, flooding possibilities, breakdowns in the logistics in their cities and towns. And towards this end, we built underground storages, to help tie people over for an extended period. We certainly don't need it for ourselves. We have our own in our own lovely home. Who are the people we're preparing for? I don't know. Could be you, Bill, or anybody that's heard us, or anybody who's an updater, or anybody listening to this program. And, of course, we at STAR and those who come through spend 7 days a week working to advance all aspects of parasensory phenomena, psi research. And as you know, there is no backing to this. This is something Dick and I do because we're devoting our lives to it. And everything that we do goes to STAR. All the book sales go to STAR, all the lectures go to STAR, all the update, subscription fees go to STAR, and that's how we continue to do what we do. And it's a place to learn. We have many, many who come because they need healing. And I spend a great deal of time in trying to put them back in harmony out of dis-ease. And that's one of the joys of my life, being able to do that. And we try to teach them skills when they do and regenerate and certainly find themselves physically in ways that their doctors perhaps told them was impossible. And it's very exciting to witness that. When the Yogata group made my purpose, this is a big quote, to trumpet the voice and scribe the pen, it's through STAR that I'm able to do this. And it's the focus of getting out the message that Dick and I do, as we did on A Slide of Light or in the Woodrow Update. And STAR, of course, is the beneficiary of everything that we do. And the more people who subscribe to the update, the more we're able to help, the more we can prepare for, the more we can store for. And we have built a most magnificent facility of which we're infinitely proud and which we invite you to come to, Bill.
I know, and if I'm ever on the East Coast, I'm going to take time to get over
there. It's a beautiful thing, and it stands for something quite wondrous.
They won't let me out of this radio station.
They won't let you out of there, huh, Bill? We know where you're going to be next Saturday and Sunday.
Certainly do.
Out of there.
Out of there. And
into the Viscount.
Down there with you.
Uh-huh.
Is there another book along the way?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, Macmillan put out On a Slide of Light, which thrilled us. But we were doubly delighted to have Doubleday approach us, and we're writing a new book, which will be out at this time next year, hopefully in time for Christmas. And I've got to tell you about the title, because it's the one sure thing. You know, the thought came to me when we were talking about Mount St. Helens. Mount St. Helens blew her top on a beautiful day. These things always seem to happen on a clear day. And you know what happens? You hear thunder. And it occurred to me that perhaps Dick and I were providing thunder on a clear day for people on the changes coming that they might not see, and that's the title of the book, Thunder on a Clear Day.
We get that in L.A. quite often.
Yes, you do. And we're working hard on it, and I'm hoping it's going to be a good book, and hopefully it's for a whole new audience.
Well, I would imagine that it's going to be a good book, and I imagine you have learned some things and have been taught some things, shown some things. To expand even further on
the revelations.
Well,
this is the fun of the Yogata group, you know. The fun part comes when they show us advanced technology. Now you see it, now you don't. Materialization and dematerialization. Like you had that day, as you described when we opened the program, of writing a word and having it gone.
Disappear.
Yes. And this is the excitement of working with the extraterrestrial group. I wish they do it more often. But they only come in now and then, and that's to tell us, rather sadly, you're right on target. Nothing's changed.
Well, but the big word that Greta used is technology. And it's a technology that allows materialization and dematerialization. It is a technology that allows teletransportation. And those are things which, as we evolve and advance, will be within the purview of the human species.
Was it the Ogatans that took away the word from me that day?
I don't know, Bill. I never ask a personal question.
I just want to know why they were
sure
messing.
Sure wasn't I.
Wonder why they were messing with my mind.
You knew their word, didn't you?
I certainly did.
Well, then I'd have to assume, and I would hate to break that word into three, that was the case.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Being messed with by extraterrestrials.
They're fun.
Sophia, you're on.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Greta.
Hi.
And Dick. Sure enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Now, what I'm calling about is I read an article about retinitis pigmentosis. It's an eye disease which leads to blindness. Now, it states that a researcher has experimented on rats and has taken out the dead cells and replaced them with live cells, enabling them to see. Now, do you see that this will be possible to have this done to a human being who has this eye disease, and if that would be soon?
Sophia, thank you for that question. It happens to hit home to me on a very personal basis. My maternal grandmother went blind because of retinitis pigmentosa at the age of 47, certainly a very, very young age.
Yes.
And Greta and I have been contributing to the Retinitis Pigmentosa Foundation over the years, hoping that a breakthrough would occur in which they could do something to alleviate the blindness that strikes roughly 100,000 or so people in the country. I was not aware of the breakthrough with rats. Certainly, it's very, very promising. If they have some transplanted cells which could return the vision to rats, hopefully it is replicatable in the human species.
You know, there are about 200 billion cells that work together to make the universe of the body possible, and all have to communicate one with the other for the human to function properly. If a transplant could be possible, and no, we did not know about this breakthrough, wouldn't it be an awesome thing if it could tune in to the rest of these cells? I'm all for that.
Right.
I believe in cellular communication. I have worked with cellular communication successfully, and I would hope, darling, that the case is that there is a cure. We certainly support the work very strongly. So many of our dear ones have been stricken by blindness. My mother was blind. My friend Helen Keller was blind. Dick's grandma was blind. So we're very, very simpatica to the eyes.
Does that help you, Sophia?
Well, I was hoping that she would say definitely soon, because I am one person that has this disease.
I take it that you're personally involved in one way or another with retinitis pigmentosa.
Well, science is working as fast as they can on those things, so be patient, honey.
I guess we'll just have to pray harder.
Uh-huh.
Thank you all.
All right.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
And Stanley.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay. I have a two-part question here, which is related. Now, the Ogaden Group, who's giving them their technology? Do they have a higher power somewhere out there that is saying, you people are unsophisticated, here's some information for you? Do they talk to any greater power in the universe? And what do they tell you about religion? Do they believe in Jesus Christ? Do they believe in Jehovah? Do they believe in Buddha? What is their concept of religion?
All right. I'm glad to answer that, because it was one of the probably less than three questions I've asked them in the 10 years. I had to ask about God early on, and I did. And the answer I got was from a little entity named Tori, and she said, "Ah, God, you must be referring to the supreme energy to whom we all report, to the highest order." And you know, Stanley, I had to take a little while to put that box in my curtain. Not that I was in a framework of anthropomorphic godism, but nonetheless, when I heard the words supreme energy, I'd never heard them before. But I sort of liked it after I got used to it, the supreme energy. They do not refer to any of the deified entities by name, be it Buddha or Muhammad or Allah or Jesus. But then again, we've never asked. They report to a higher order. As far as their technology goes, they're far more advanced than we, and that they were willing to show us through many, many years of our lives, whether it was, as I said before, through materialization or dematerialization, through teletransportation or teleportation, through telepathy, through tongues. They have shown us so many things, and to them it's ho-hum. But then again, I did ask my second question after God, "Hey, on a scale of 0 to 10, where are we and where are you?" With 10 being high, and they laughed, and they said, "Well, I guess if you have to put numbers to it in a human way, let's say that you're at about 2, And I said, and you? They said, we're at about 7. And I accepted that because they were showing us what we thought were miracles.
That's very interesting. They don't have MTV, do they?
Stanley, you know, the system that the Earth is part of, our solar system, is roughly 4.6 billion years old, which makes us a second or third generation star. And as our telescopes become more powerful and we can bring in greater light, they're pushing the boundaries to the life of the universe out as far as 20 billion years, which puts our longevity as a system to less than 25% of the time that the universe is now being counted. Now, man, in the 4.6 billion years, is counted to about 3 million of those years, and that's controversial as if he goes back that far. Now, is it so difficult to visualize civilizations in orbiting solar systems of first or second generation stars billions of years older than we are that would have evolved to the levels that we will attain as we attain those years?
A billion years ago, the highest form of life on this planet was an earthworm. So, you know, it isn't so difficult for me to visualize creatures, entities, beings more evolved than we in relation to what was here a billion years ago.
I have a hard time calling them creatures. You know, if they can get here on some kind of a craft, it seems like we are the creatures and they're the beings.
And yet they're so gentle, such gentle entities. The question really is, why us? Why would they even be interested in us? And of course the answer came back in an analogy we could understand. When we asked it, why did you help the opera? It's so far away. So the distances are a little greater. When someone needs help, you help them.
Well, thank you.
Positive energy of love.
That answered everything.
Okay, Stanley.
Okay.
Stanley, you're very kind.
Good to have you aboard. And we have Jim here. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Greta.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. These changes that are seeming to come about in the future or starting now, is their purpose to eliminate those without a developed consciousness, or is the purpose to enhance the consciousness of the people that are here?
Jim, I'd like to tackle that before Greta gets in. Our recorded history is very, very limited. But as our scientists are able to go back in time, they're finding that in our astronomical swings around the center of the galaxy, we go through cycles of geological activity. We go through periodicity of volcanism. We go through climactic changes. Now, we in the middle of the 20th century to the end of the 20th century have enjoyed some of the warmest period in the last 5,000 years. But if you take what is normal climate in the last million years, it would be an ice age. Because an ice age runs for roughly 90,000 years with a warming period for 10 or 12,000 years in between. So what we're experiencing now in the changes of the climate are the natural cycles of nature as the planet advances.
I would like to take the question from a different point of view, if I may. I think it's time to change our own thinking very radically. And while we acknowledge, and we have to acknowledge, you know, that old habits die hard. My kids call me an antediluvian new age dinosaur. And they're right. It's very hard to let go of your sacred cows. Now, if a scenario such as the Ogata group comes to pass, and they indicate sadly that it will, I feel that we have to dissolve a lot of the artificial barriers that separate us as a people if we are going to survive. And I mean barriers that are racial, political, religious, national, ideological. We're in the advanced stages of our slow progress from the Stone Age to the New Age. And we're in a cosmic countdown. And I think that in order to survive and be what the Ogata group call the survivors or the leaders, architects of the future, we have to let go of old age thinking. We have to anticipate some 21st century cosmic revelations without fear, without stress. And I'm here to tell you, some days it's easier than others. For me.
Well, one other question. The time travel thing seems to exist. I don't have a problem with that at all. But does that mean that if you can go forward and backward in time, does that mean that time itself doesn't really exist and therefore change itself doesn't exist.
No, I don't think so. I think that what you and I are locked into is linear thinking.
Are they?
This is
the Ogadens.
We live in a linear world. They're not prohibited by those barriers out there.
So the same laws of nature don't govern them as govern us.
I think they do.
Oh, I think so.
I think they do, Jim, because whether you're an astronomer and you look into a telescope and you watch the formation of a galaxy, or you're an atomic physicist and you watch the formation of a subatomic particle, you're dealing with the birth, the life, and the death of an energy formation.
Right.
And everything in between is us.
And also, in our own solar system, every one of our planets has a different concept of time.
Mm-hmm.
On Jupiter, it's not the same as on Earth, and on Mars, it's not the same as on Venus.
We live in a local phenomenon, it might be
said. Yes, that's
right.
Exactly so. So we're bounded by a 24-hour clock, but our 24 hours is not the same in any other part of our own solar system, and heaven knows it isn't the same further out into the cosmos. I have no problem with that.
Does that help you, Jim?
It's great. I'm fascinated by it. I have never heard of Greta before, and I'm just completely enamored with everything that she's talking about.
We hope to see you out at the Viscount Hotel then.
I'll be there.
Great. Look us up.
Well. Thank you very much.
Good to have you aboard.
Good evening.
It's Open Mind on this Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins with Steve on the line. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Super.
Great. Hi, Greta.
Hi, Steve.
Greta, I wanted to ask you, you know, we're coming up to, I guess, the one-year anniversary of the Challenger tragedy, and I wanted to know if the Ogata group has made any transmission or information to you about what the significance was to that event.
I'm sorry, Bill, we couldn't hear that.
Steve wanted to know if the Ogatans had passed any information about the significance of the Challenger disaster to you.
No, they have not. Sad, sad, sad thing. However, you might want to ask that question of Tom Bearden the next time he's on your program.
You'll have an opportunity to ask.
I would suggest Steve call back when Tom is on, and he might give you answers that you don't like, but they are fascinating.
Mm.
They're mind-boggling, and I think they're credible.
Tom,
I dream of paraphrasing him.
We have, we've had Tom on before about
yes,
how that actually was an act of war. The downing of the Challenger.
I'll listen in.
I think
yes.
That's in February. General Graham and Tom Bearden will be on. We call it Soviet Star Wars.
Well, thank you very much, then.
Okay.
Okay.
Good to have you aboard.
Thank you.
That's going to be a dandy show.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had Tom here at our last conference last April, and he is just a wonderful human being.
And one of the more brilliant men in the world.
And one of the more brilliant men in the world. His third alarm, his new book is excellent. His Excalibur briefing should be on every shelf.
Fred Lance will scare you to for Jesus, won't it?
Well, I'm not sure that we understand all of it, but we're trying.
All right, Al, you're on.
Yes. Greta?
Yes, Al.
Yes, I wanted to ask whether you had read any of Ruth Montgomery's books.
Ruth Montgomery's a good friend of mine. I spoke to her not an hour before this program.
Oh, how wonderful.
And I have read all of her books, and she is a darling. We don't always see eye to eye, and that's what makes for very good friendship. That I did not understand her walk-ins as well through her books as I did through speaking with her when she was here with me for a few days.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the audiences who read her ought never to forget that this was a very, very pragmatic businesswoman, writer, Hearst paper person who was on the trail with Eisenhower and Truman and Kennedy and Nixon. This was a hardcore businesswoman who also went out on a limb, and I support her posture strongly. By the way, she has just bought a home on the water in Florida, which I gave her the devil for, and she laughed and said, well, I spoke to my guides, and they say the turn is coming, you know, this polar flip or whatever, by the year 2000, but I won't be around to see it, so why shouldn't I enjoy the sun and fun?
Yeah.
She's very cute.
The date is getting closer then.
Yeah. But she's a lovely, lovely lady and deserves respect.
And she's made a large impact on a large number of people and opened up their eyes to the awesome possibilities that will happen between now and the year 2000.
Yes, we agree on one thing, Ruth and I. I never try to convince anybody of anything. I just lay it out and let them make up their minds, and so does she. And she really doesn't care whether people believe or disbelieve. She's out there with a message, and I think it's a good one.
Sure, just give them enough time, and they'll get there.
That's right.
That's wonderful. I was hoping maybe you had a little closer timing on when that cataclysm...
I'm glad you're putting it that way. Let me make a statement that I make very, very strongly, if I may. I don't give or ask for specifics. I don't know anybody that's ever been right about them. From the days of Nostradamus up through Casey to today, when people tell you a specific, don't believe it. Don't buy it.
But somebody
it's
does know,
accurate.
Huh? But somebody does know.
Who?
Don't the spirits that she talks to, Arthur Ford?
I can't vouch for that. I only know that I have dealt with some of the most brilliant psychic minds in the world, and none of them have been right on specifics.
But they all talk about the end of the century.
But they do, yes. That's the generality. They talk about this end of the century. A friend of ours is Billy Graham. He calls it the second coming. Ruth talks about a polar flip. Everybody has a different name for it. We're all calling it a new age. We all see a golden tomorrow. And, hey, if it isn't on September 22nd, 1998 or whatever, so it'll be in 1998 or 1999. But we know, or we think we know, that the general time is now. And it's leading towards the turn of the century.
And she did say there was a safe place in the United States.
Well, a lot of people say that. There is one not too far distant who says the Northwest is very safe. Our posture is there are thousands and thousands of safe places. If I were in the only safe place, or you were, or Knight was, or Montgomery was, or McLean was, or anybody else... We wouldn't be where we are because we wouldn't want to be inundated.
Like Ruth Montgomery, we're not scared yet.
Well, that's not so. She's a very thoughtful creature. Remember now, you're talking about a septuagenarian who's entitled to say, I won't be here. Uh-huh. I've been told by my guides, who I believe, that I will be crossed over by them.
Oh, I see.
And she buys that, and that's fine.
Well, I'm just kind of...
Let me tell you a short story.
I'm kind of worried. I will be here.
You will be. Let me just tell you a short story. In September 1981, Greta was addressing a group of Canadian executives in Vancouver, British Columbia. And we were out there for a few days, and I looked at the beautiful landscape and the awesomeness of the scenery there. And I turned to Greta and I said, my God, we know so many people here, so many dear friends that we have, both on the Canadian side of the West Coast and on the American side of the West Coast, down from Washington, Oregon, and California. I wonder if the West Coast is safe. See, this was early on when these predictions were coming. And one of the Ogata entities came in. And this is what they said, and we put it down, and we published it in our newsletter, and I think it's worth repeating. And this is verbatim. After the first big cataclysm, there will be 20 moons. Now, a moon is approximately a month.
Yes.
To readjust, reevaluate, and remove yourself from any area you think unsafe. Now, what that says to us is there will be a major cataclysm, which if indeed you're caught in and there's a big hole in where you're standing, you'll be gone. But for the most part, it will give you an opportunity to reevaluate your situation and take the action for you and your family that will probably be the course to take.
Let me put it to you this way. We have four grown children, all older than we are, you understand. And one lives in New York City, and one lives in Boston, and one lives in Florida. And only one is in a so-called safe area. and they go about their business as young executives doing their everyday work. They are prepared as best they can be with their small storage programs and so forth. But let me tell you that if a major catastrophe hits, they'll start their countdown of 20 moons.
Uh-huh.
And that's about as specific as I think they have ever gotten.
How many will survive the cataclysm?
Well, you know, it depends on who you talk to. An Ivan Browning and a Dr. Graham and an Andrea Puharich have numbers that are staggering.
One out of 400?
Well, no, let's put this let's put this into a perspective. If we put it into the framework of a life eternal, which I think that listening to Open Mind, you have to.
Why, of course.
Then we all survive, and whether it's incarnate or disincarnate.
All right, now don't beg it, Dick.
Now,
give him an answer.
No, I'm going to, because the numbers game is something we'll only know after the fact. They extrapolate a population between 6 and 6.25 billion by the year 2000.
Yes.
This summer we passed the 5 billion mark. One day in July, the 5 billionth human emerged on the planet.
Yes.
Now, the eminent gentleman that Greta referred to talk about a population at the turn of the century being between 1.5 to 2 billion inhabitants.
I was hearing 10 million or so from Ruth Montgomery, I thought.
Oh, no. They're in the billions, whether it's 1 billion or 2 billion. It's not as dire as just a handful of survivors starting from scratch. No.
We have a guy not too far from here who informed us the other day that 4,037 would be left and 37 would be in his community. And we had all we could do to keep a straight face and say, well, if this is what you believe, that's fine. We would hope that better than 2 billion would survive in the flesh on the planet.
Yeah. But that ocean's going 1,000 miles an hour out there, you know. And if that earth underneath it does any twisting at all, that ocean's going to keep right on going.
You talked about beachfront property in Las Vegas?
Yeah. Even the Jehovah's Witness says, the Bible says, get away from the ocean. They even knocked on my door and I asked them about it. They said, yeah, the Bible says, beware of living on the ocean. In the coming problem in the, you know, the Bible.
Well, what is it? About 80% of the people live within 50 kilometers of the sea.
That's right.
So we do factor it in. And again, I think each one has to think and relate to what his posture is going to be. And then you go with it in a positive way.
You know, in the 1930s, Edgar Cayce made a prediction that the Great Lakes would meet the Gulf of Mexico, and what that would do is even bisect the United States. Well, currently, our geologists are reporting a tilt to the floor of the Great Lakes, and new record highs of these lakes are inundating some very valuable lakeshore property, so that we're getting much, much closer to some of the predictions that were made back away.
Uh-huh.
You have to assign the responsibility of evolution to yourself. How you are going to survive, evolve, maintain, and do.
But Ruth was talking.
Don't worry about the broad picture. Look at the small. I remember when my daughter walked the Appalachian Trail, 2,142 miles. And she walked it solo. And she said to me afterwards, Mother, in the morning when I'd wake up, if I would say to myself, I have 2,120 miles left, I wouldn't have lasted 3 days. What I did was get up and say, I know that today I can make 16 miles. And I think it's the same with survival. You take it in small packets and you do what you can in a very positive way.
Yeah. Okay, Al?
Yep. Very fine.
Very good. Good
very
to have
good.
You
thank
aboard.
You much. Thank you, Al.
We're going to take our break now here at 11 o'clock for the news, and we'll return for another full hour. North Carolina, Greta Woodrow and Dick Smolo. Greta wrote The Slide of Light. I'll be appearing with her next week out at the Viscount Hotel at the airport. We certainly hope that you come out. And we're talking about the great changes, the information that has been given Greta through her very unusual relationship with a group of entities that come from another place, concerned about the welfare of the people of Earth. And we have Annette on the line. Hello, Annette. No? Are we there? Hello, hello, hello.
I'm here, Bill.
Ah, you are there. But we are wondering about Annette or some of the others. We have lost a computer here for the moment.
Well, then let me just say for those who are going to want to come to the weekend that you and I and Dick are sharing next weekend at the Viscount, let them call Dot.
Yes.
As quickly as they can at the 213 area code in California, 935-0891. And if they want rooms, they better call that Viscount Airport Hotel and say they're with Star.
All right, we want them to get out there and...
Otherwise, they won't have room.
And get on
with it.
Well,
that's the stayover.
The stayovers.
Stay over and enjoy the entire thing. Robert, you're on.
Good evening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm a very strong believer of astral projection and reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two questions for Greta. And what I noticed is when I read the Bible and it says you got to be saved and all this. And is it possible that Christian people and all and the believers of the Bible... they're misinterpreting it. And also, I was wondering if, I believe in fasting too, and if you fast for quite a while, you know, supposedly about 30 days, 49 days, would it be easier for you to project, you know, to have a out-of-body experience?
Robert, I'm not sure I understand the question. I have no idea what religiosity of any kind has to do with an astral projection of the separation of mind and body, of getting out of your vehicle as you would your car. I'm always reluctant to even bring religion into the dialogue because I don't know that it has a place at all. But perhaps I don't understand the question.
Okay, well, what about the misinterpreting the Bible?
Robert, I'd like to quote Reverend John Price. I don't think that either Greta or myself are qualified to interpret the Bible. But let me tell you what Reverend John Price, who's a Christian minister in Austin, Texas, said relative to reincarnation. He says the concept of reincarnation was part of the Christian teaching until 533 A.D., where at the Second Ecclesiastical Council at Constantinople, it was banished from official Christianity. And then he went on in his speech to say, it's interesting that a doctrine that had been a teaching of Buddha and accepted by Jesus, one that had been taught by the Hindus, the Egyptians, the Greeks, and the Jews, could be dismissed with a stroke of the pen by a council of men.
I see. Okay, well then, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. I think another question Robert asked in there, Greta, was would fasting help the ability to go out of body?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Bill. I'm not for anything that's not in moderation. So I'm the wrong one to ask. If the answer is yes, I have never tried it. I believe in just about anything except drugs in moderation.
Hello?
Drugs, forget.
The mechanics of going out of body are probably best taught by Bob Monroe. And that would be a good question, Bill, for Bob Monroe, who I'm sure is on your program from time to time.
Oh, yes, he is. In fact, he's going to be on again this fall. We will be doing a show in a couple of weeks with the group from Search and Prove, Jerry Gross, and Jim Voigt on the out of body. There are a number of ways to do it. I just never have tumbled onto it myself.
Well, you know, meditation itself is just a device to remove the interference of the body from the functioning of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more and nothing less. I mean, there's nothing greatly esoteric about it. People are always asking about meditation, and their whole posture changes when they use the word as if it's a religious or esoteric word. It's not. Most people don't know how to meditate because they don't know how to concentrate.
Okay.
You know, there is probably an overlap between out-of-body experiences and deep dreaming. You mentioned when we talked about that dream state, Bill, mm-hmm. that another way to go forward or backward in time was with out-of-body, and I think that the dream state is a form of out-of-body experience.
We all supposedly do this every night, go out-of-body. We're talking, though, the experience that you can remember.
Yes.
And... that's probably very true, Richard. I know that we have discussed this at some length with Robert Monroe.
Always do. Can't get off that subject when you have Bob on.
That's right.
Did he help?
He's the one to ask because he's the expert.
He certainly is.
And there are books that can teach you, because my daughter walks around with one, on how to remember your dreams.
I don't know whether I want to.
Me either, Bill. I'm all I can do to deal with the daytime.
Yeah, some of them that I do remember are just so silly. All right, Jeffrey, you're on.
Yes, before I go on to my main question, do you know if Bob Monroe is related to either Marilyn Monroe or else Boy Scoutmaster in Santa Monica, Keith Monroe?
I have no idea.
Okay, now with my main question, it's kind of a two question. First of all, what is going to be our daily lives in the Golden Age? How will our daily lives go about, you know, when the Golden Age comes that we have to endure so many changes till the end of the century? We're going to be living somehow in the Golden Age, and what are our daily lives going to be? Going to be like when we are finally in the Golden Age, washing, bathing, and keeping ledger and running businesses are going to be so different that we're all left to be great creative and with some kind of guaranteed income, maybe even spiritual. And the second question is, for the people who have perished from these changes, who have died because of these catastrophes, are they going to be enjoying a better life on the other side, or are they just going to be dead and it's going to be just tough beans for the ones who haven't been able to survive and endure all these changes?
Well, from what we know of the other side, it's always nice over there.
Yes, he's asking survival on one foot, isn't he, Bill?
Mm-hmm.
Let me take the second one first because I love the question, and that's really what's it like on the other side. If I didn't...
Wait a minute. What's it like for the living when the Golden Age comes?
Well, she was taking the last part of your question.
Thank you.
Well, that's all right. If you want to go to the first, let me say that we're going to talk about frequencies, higher vibrations, to start with. We're going to get beyond the use of 5 gross senses. Buckminster Fuller once said 99% of all transactions in this universe are either ultra or infra, command sensory tuning. And if you want me to translate that into English, it means that you're only aware of 1% of what goes on all around you. 99% are above or below what we see, smell. Remember I talked about opening up that nightlight to see more of the universe in the room. We will have to extend our awareness, expand our capacity for awareness. That includes something known as telepathy. It includes being able to clearly read someone. And that sure eliminates an awful lot of negativity, lying, cheating, stealing. Dick wants to get in on this. I can see it. Go ahead, Dick.
Well, we are, in order to function as a unit, we have to recognize that we are, or the planet is that small, it's very finite, and that we must live as a global village. In order to live as a global village, that would indicate a freedom from conflict and a freedom from the fears of want, which means a cooperation such as Wendell Willkie envisioned in the 40s in his book One World has got to come about. Now, Billy Graham, who's a neighbor down the road in North Carolina here, talks about the third millennium or the 1,000 years, the golden years of peace, tranquility, and advancement for the human race. And for that to occur, we have to transcend the conflicts and the Sturm und Drang that is on the planet today. And so what would the projection for the golden age be? It sounds wonderful to me. This sounds wonderful.
Okay, good luck with the brand new 7-octave spectrum, half-a-color computers and printers and things like that when we finally advance that far. Now, I'm not being sarcastic either. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we will, you can imagine that we'll take the technology with us through all of this. And
infrared, ultraviolet, and a sun lamp and things like that. Imagine computers covering like that, never mind visible color.
Right.
Oh, okay, thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
Before you get off, when you talk about colors, I wrote in on a slide of light in 1980 or 79 that when I went where I call out there, out of the body, out, I was able to see the music and hear the colors.
Oh, Papa.
Well, this was my experience.
Right.
I was thrilled to see that Shirley MacLaine picked the sentence up and used it in one of her books as well. And she also claims to have seen the music and heard the colors.
Right.
These are very palpable things when you're out of this dimension. And I am hopeful that part of the golden age for mankind and in his arsenal of sensory capacities will be these abilities. And that, to me, is a wondrous thing.
Does that help you out, Jeffrey?
Well, right, of course, because I'm enthusiast for color. Okay, I will language the line on to the next caller. But thank you very much. I sure appreciate it. Yeah,
thank you, Jeffrey.
Bill, in the news that was on at the break, they talked about the earthquake in China.
Mm-hmm.
And in line with the conversation we had, do you remember the ancient Chinese curse which said, may you be born in an interesting time?
We certainly were.
I think we are now.
And we have an interesting time here. We're going to take a little pause, John DeLine. Hello, George.
Hello. My apologies, I have a bad cold.
Well, my apologies, because I've always got one.
I'm sure Greta won't be able to hear me.
Can you hear George, Greta?
Barely.
Okay.
I'll translate.
I'd like to ask you to relay my question. I have two. The first is, what town in Washington is the QFON?
I think it's in, I can get you the telephone number. I think it's in Spokane.
Well, I can get it. If it's in Spokane, I can get it some information.
Yeah.
All right. My question for Greta is, Robert Monroe has a foundation somewhat like hers in the same general geographical area in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Does she know the foundation?
Yes, in Virginia.
Teaching activities Monroe carries out. I'm going to hang up so I can hear her.
Okay, he just wanted to know, Greta, were you familiar with Robert Monroe and the Institute of Applied Sciences that he has? And what do you feel is happening over there, and is it similar to what you're doing?
He is using mechanical devices to heighten the sensory awareness of the individual and bring you to an out-of-body experience. It's supposed to be remarkable. Greta and Bob have been in touch back and forth and have never gotten together.
Only on the phone. He's in Virginia and we're in North Carolina. But I understand they do wonderful work over there.
Well, they do more than just go out of body over there. They're doing a lot of research. They're certainly looking at a lot of history because they can go back to it. Finding out a lot about the human consciousness that you were talking about earlier. We had quite a spectacular show with him, I thought, here not too long ago.
Wonderful.
All right. Melinda, you're on.
Hi. I don't want to sound stupid or anything. My husband and I... We're new listeners to this radio station,
mm-hmm.
And we tuned in tonight, and we were in the car, and we have found this entire conversation extremely fascinating.
Well, I'm glad you got aboard, partner.
I know, it's really, we're just like wow. But I do have a question for Greta, and it's not only know that it's a question so much, it's just, I'm really kind of confused on her belief as far as, at one point I heard her say that she doesn't feel religion even fits into her... The whole feeling on...
I didn't say that, dear.
Okay, did I misunderstand what you said?
Religiosity belonged in the questions that we were addressing on change.
On change. Okay, that's just what I wanted to know. Because sometimes, many times, in fact, from what you said, it sounded like you were... had many beliefs from the Bible. Many of the things you've seen, like you've said, has, like the beliefs that are centered around that. And that's what I just wanted to know is, in the beliefs of these entities and stuff.
Remember, we're talking about entities,
right.
Not deities. I have a very strong religious conviction of my own, and I don't think that it has any place in the dialogue of the Ogata group, simply because there is no connection in my heart or in my mind. When I turn to God, when I approach a healing. I certainly don't turn to God when I am a channel.
Now, can you clarify the difference for me?
Between what and what?
Well, you said you don't. Okay, the last part you said you do turn to God with a channel.
No, she said she turns to God when she's going to do a healing, but she doesn't whenever she is going to channel.
Be a channel.
Okay, now I don't understand what the channel part is.
Well, I don't necessarily turn to God when a friend comes into my home, whom I know.
Right.
And I don't turn to God when an entity from another place comes into my vehicle, whom I know, because I don't think it's necessary at that moment. As far as religious lines go, it matters not to me whether I say a Hail Mary, face east, say a Shema, whatever makes a person comfortable.
Right.
I will pray with them in the words that make them comfortable, as long as we all appreciate a higher intelligence, a supreme energy. I don't think we have to delineate it. Once we do, once you define, you've lost something.
Right. You regret, I find you very fascinating. That's just totally intrigued me, this whole evening listening to you and to Dick, and I'm just really happy and glad that we were able to tune in and listen, and we're going to continue to listen.
God bless your heart. You won't find better than Bill Jenkins here.
You know what?
Open-minded.
I agree. This is my first time, and I'm just totally fascinated.
Well, Melinda, do you understand what channeling means?
To a point. Not completely, and you know, I don't mean to sound ignorant or anything, but this is...
Well, don't feel that way at all, but if I could explain it this way, Greta explained it earlier in what she goes through, but it's the ability that I guess all of us really have to receive information that comes from a point other than our consciousness.
I agree with it. I believe in that.
And in Greta's case, she's getting her information from a group of entities that come from a distant planet.
That's amazing.
Okay,
thank you so much. I really enjoyed that.
Some well thought out chances. And don't be afraid of success or failure, because success and failure really don't make the criteria by which you live. I am very, very fond of those who not only dare to try, but those who dare to fail. And that's wonderful.
As long as they dare to, you know. As long as they're trying, you know. That's amazing. And I also want to make a real quick comment, too, about the RPs. I'm totally blind myself, but mine's from diabetes. But when the lady had called in about the RP, because I work at the Braille Institute here in Orange County, and I have so many friends, dear friends, that have got RP, and I was totally amazed by that.
Well, we hope that something can come out of that.
Yeah, I hope that's true. That sounds wonderful.
We hope so. I worked for years at the Institute in New York. In fact, most of the fiction books that are out on tape are my voice.
Is that right?
So we're very, very connected to, and very simpatica to, those who have eyesight problems.
How can you miss that voice of yours?
I know that it's, I'll be able to, next time I hear it, if I hear it on a talking book or whatever, I'll be able to pick it up right away.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melinda, for joining us, and do make a habit out of it.
I am. This is fascinating. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'm very fascinated by the program this evening.
Thank you.
Because all of my life I have always been interested in something beyond ourselves. And I wanted to ask the woman if extraterrestrials have been visiting our planet for thousands of years, why are we still so afraid of them, and why haven't they become a part of our world? You know, I don't understand the big thing going on here.
You've answered your own question, why indeed, and I think it's becoming more and more easy to accept, don't you? Thanks perhaps in part to the mass media, where they're exposing you to all sorts of wonderful concepts. When a Spielberg comes out with his E.T. or his Close Encounters, when a Shirley MacLaine goes out on a limb, when a Jay-Z Knight presents a Ramtha, years ago when we came out with On a Slide of Light or Write the Update, we're saying to people, hey, contemplate the possibilities. They've been here for a millennia. And now, you know, is the time when they, again, everything goes in cycles. 2,600-year cycles, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
History repeats itself monotonously, and we're in that period now. My God, it's awesome.
to contemplate that we're here to involve in this.
Yeah, but why don't they pull us out of some of our problems? For instance...
That's not their job.
Oh, no, but wait a minute, dear. I mean, here we are confronted with AIDS, right? Something that is just going to wipe out so many millions of people if they don't find a vaccine in the near future. I mean, if these people are so advanced, and they must be to do what they're doing, why not throw a little light on our problems here? It doesn't make sense to me, dear, you know.
Well,
I understand it, yet I don't.
We have too many incidents whenever they do try to get close that we shoot at them. Would you like to run down to that snake pit?
Absolutely, and you know, plagues are something that are historic. There have been so many plagues, and there will, with our own technology as it advances, find ourselves in a position where we do indeed find the answers. I don't think it's their job, do you, Dick?
Mark, one of the great precepts of the higher evolutions is the exercise of free will, not to direct anybody, but to give just a little direction. And I think what will happen once the recognition of extraterrestrial civilization is on a worldwide basis is that the philosophical, moral, and social views as practiced on our planet will be revived and changed for the better.
You know, we took for a slogan for Star Foundation a statement that was made very early on, and that was that they would give directions, not directives. And that followed a long dialogue on this subject of free will. Nobody has to be told what to do. I wouldn't want to be told what to do. I wouldn't be in this if they were dictating to me.
You know, when we are ready to receive and do something, we will evolve and pull the technology out. Certainly fission and fusion were here since the beginning of the universe, and it was only in the late 30s or 40s that Einstein put together the ability for us to do it. And, of course, mankind did it in a manner which didn't benefit mankind particularly. But that technology has been around since the beginning of time. It would have been incongruous, out of a time phase, an anachronism, if indeed they came down to give fission and fusion to an aboriginal type of society here.
Okay, but I wanted to say, couldn't they channel to someone, to a biochemist? I mean, let's face it, you know, here we are confronted with a terrible, terrible problem. And, you know, there's no vaccine in sight for 5 or 10 years. And I'm a teacher by profession, and you're not going to tell these kids in college, hey, you better do this, you better do that, because they're not going to listen to you. They're just not going to. So I think if these extraterrestrials have so much know-how, I mean, they could just work through somebody else and just say, hey, look, try it this way, you know?
I'm all for that. Let me tell you, we are not the ones, of course, who are getting hardcore science. There are those who do. Tom Bearden is one of them who gets hardcore science.
Who's this now?
Tom
Bearden, who will be on the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Nikola Tesla pretty well says that's where he got his information.
To him.
Einstein says that's where he got his information.
Okay, but do you understand what I'm saying? Here we are confronted with, you know, I mean, let's be honest. You know, kids are going to lose their lives by the million here if something is not done.
There are some very, very encouraging things that are being done in AIDS, and it's not being done in a chemical way, but it's being done in an electronic way.
I understand, but what about getting that channeling that we're talking about?
That's where that technology of which I'm speaking here that I happen to know something about came from.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, that's marvelous. You know, the reason I talk like this is because I am a singer by profession, classical singer, and when I was studying voice very heavily and trying to sing these high notes, I was practicing a deep form of breathing. And I, in fact, one night left my body. I mean, I felt this force. Yes, I felt this force at the foot of my bed. And pow, I was out, you know.
Welcome to the club.
Pardon me?
Said welcome to the club. Everybody's in that club but Bill.
Is that right? Well, no, but, you know, I wasn't even trying to do it. I was just taking an enormous breath to sing this high B natural from an aria, from an opera.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, you know, I mean, I guess whatever I did, you just put this thing off to go. And it only happened twice. But I know that things are going on, and I'm very open to all of this, and I try to tell my students that they should be open also. But there is a tremendous scare of this AIDS disease, and it's frightening. You know?
Well,
it is
indeed.
There are some great advances being made. In a very unusual way, I can say that much about it, and that's about all I can tell you right now.
Well, anyway, thanks for your time. I enjoy the show.
Keep breathing deeply.
Keep helping.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Good to have you aboard. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we do finally.
Good evening.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful to talk to you both. I'm looking forward to the Whole Life Expo. That sounds very exciting. You know, it's interesting. The man that just spoke talked about deep breathing and being a singer. I was a singer at one time, and I'm a deep breather. But I had an experience last week when I was watching Shirley MacLaine's film, Out on a Limb. And it was quite, it was emotionally very exciting and upsetting and frightening in a way, because she was talking about out-of-body experience. And suddenly I felt that I had been out of body many times as a child when I thought I was dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it was dreaming or whether it was out of body experience, but I had the same dream over and over again. And I was flying in the room. And it was a wonderful, wonderful feeling, and I hated to wake up out of the dream. It was exhilarating. It was peaceful. I didn't know at the time it was spiritual. And I just wondered if it was an out-of-body experience. And if so, why would I have it? What was the reason for it?
To have a good experience.
Well, that's probably the basic answer. The human being is able, of course, to separate the life force from the physical vehicle. And I guess only you can know if that was your experience, Annette.
It sounds like one,
mm-hmm.
flying around the room, but maybe you did, Anne.
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And Joe, you're on.
Hello, Bill. Hi, Greta, Dick. How you doing?
Hello.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about if there was any information given to you or any personal comments about the economy and whether or not we could possibly have another world war soon.
Well, certainly the changes that are coming will bring our economy to a change phase. The 1929 experience showed us that you can't spend more than you have for a considerable period of time. And we've been running, as has most of the world, a deficit financing. So I think we're going to see a great revision in the financial structures. Our financial markets have gone from investment grade to gambling casinos, and some of the great financial minds of the country, like Felix Rowetten and Bill Simon, William Simon, former Secretary of the Treasury, are beginning to be very, very concerned about the gambling aspects in our financial markets. So in an economic sense, I think we are going to go through some revisions, because we're not solving our financial problems. We're just building bigger and bigger and bigger numbers.
We'll have to think twice if we have another day like last Friday.
Oh, my goodness. Wasn't that something? Wasn't that something?
I didn't think it was.
They could find the thing. It's a runaway freight train. Yeah.
Well, it's a war-based economy, and if they do try and stimulate the economy with one more war, we all lose. Unfortunately.
Too bad they can't stimulate it with space travel.
Well, yeah.
We did do it one time, you remember.
Yeah, you're talking about one mode. I guess the best way now is the proven existence of unified field. I mean, that's only obvious. I guess, what's the guy's name? Newman. He's already proven that it works, and it's a major controversy. As far as the extraterrestrials not getting involved, I think that they already are involved, and that they try and stay out of it, but when it comes right down to it, they're not going to let a handful of people, and that's really what it is, a handful of greedy people that are trying to throw a monkey wrench in the whole works. There has to be somebody to take care of it. I mean, we've relinquished control or been stepped on so many times that, well, it would be nearly impossible for us unless there was a revolution of sorts. To take back the power that we've been robbed of. I find it very unfortunate. I don't know if you noticed that a politician took his life recently, but apparently it was bribery, and he had something to do with the Treasury, and he knew that something was coming up. I refrain from speaking any further on it other than the fact that it's going to be crazy. See, if you watch the market, it's gone straight up and straight down. So something is terribly, terribly wrong. And, you know, for a country that is totally bankrupt to loan itself another $1 trillion to go out and instigate another war is asinine. I don't care what Reagan says or what any of those people say. They're only fooling themselves, and if they keep it up, we're going to see direct intervention. It's happened before. They've seen ships over the missiles and have found that the programs have been changed. So they don't have control, and if they claim they do, it's a lie.
Joe, what you're saying is that it is a runaway freight train and nobody is solving any of the problems. They're just getting worse and larger.
But we're all learning from the experience. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just speaking about it plainly. Yeah, it scares me, but okay, I chose to be here to be scared, whatever that means. All I know is what's going on, and as much as they try and hide the truth, they're digging a bigger hole, and they're going to bury themselves in it. So I'm speaking of the handful now that has conglomerated to a point where they have a monopoly over everything, spiritual and physical. They've got a stranglehold on it.
There's one thing they don't have a stranglehold on, and that is your mind and my mind and the ability to speak out and refuse to get put in this little mold that they want you to get up and go to work, come home, watch television, go to bed, get up, go to work, and don't think.
But, you know, you talk about getting help. I can't emphasize enough in my own thinking that nobody can make decisions for you but you. The individual, I don't think, is any longer able to abdicate responsibility for himself to this ubiquitous they. You know, they really should not be making decisions for us, and I don't care if the they is the government, the state, the gurus, the extraterrestrial. We must assume the decision-making responsibility. I mean, it's our future. This is why I said you have to, at certain times, look at it in a very small packet. What are you going to do, you, for survival? You know, the one trait universal to survival is attitude. And the tools for survival are in our heads. Without the right attitude, there are no tools that can save you. And I think that the time has come where everybody has to simply rate themselves. A sense of purpose. And this means having both long-range and short-range goals. Rational thinking. Survivors are planners. Unconventional thinking. And this means being able to redefine situations, to see it differently. Anything goes, you know, if it means your survival. We talk about creativity. Resourceful thinkers devise ways of using equipment, for example, in unusual fashion to accomplish what they want. Positive self-images, feeling confident that you, by golly, can take care of yourself, that you like yourself, is a key characteristic of survival. But we can't abdicate these responsibilities to governments or to anybody else, and that includes extraterrestrials. We are an adaptable people. And we have to be able to stand the stresses of the unpredictable and of the unknown. We need an inner strength that I think people are starting to show. And man is meant to survive. I believe human beings have been destined to survive. In fact, the struggle to survive is what people are good at, or none of us would be here at all today.
Joe, you may have been describing one of the great triggers for these changes that are going to come up.
Right.
Well, a friend of mine had a vision where he saw some of the key installations right here in town, in Los Angeles, were seemingly destroyed by a laser weapon. It sounded very much like these nuclear lasers they're trying to deploy. Curiously enough, I know about scalar technology, but I don't think that was what this was. If it was what he was seeing in a prophetic dream, I believe it was the fact that they launched, somehow they got one of those things up there, one of those satellites, and they punched in a program, and it was reprogrammed by somebody else to come right back on them. I mean, these people, it's obvious they don't care about other people. You know, they want to rape every resource, but they're going to get a taste of their own medicine. Like I said before, they're digging their own hole. But anyways, thank you very much for what you're, you know, I agree. People should start programming their own lives and not be such a followers all the time of, in blind faith. It's great to have faith in yourself and know who you are, what you are, where you are. Those are all important things, but just to follow blindly the system, and especially such a corrupt and insidious, insensitive, and really sometimes just purely asinine kind of a system, that's, to me, it's counterproductive.
Well, there are a lot of people who are not doing it, and I'd like to point you to two books that will kind of maybe make you feel better about it. The Aquarian Conspiracy of
Marilyn
Ferguson, and The Turning Point by Dr. Friedrich Capra. If anything, there seems to be a vast global underground at work, or a subculture, if you want to call it. At one time, the United States was a subculture, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And because there is this disenchantment with the establishment, and it is beginning to work and play among itself now, and not pay attention to what the other people are doing. It will interface with them when it's necessary, and this is true in science and in government, and it doesn't seem to have any bounds, and it certainly has no guru.
I agree.
That is happening.
I agree. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like it was such a negative thing, what's going on here. It's out with the old and with the new. That's great. I appreciate that. Well, anyways, I don't want to ramble on much longer. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us on that.
Good night.
What's that telephone number again?
Thanks for having Greta and her husband on. I was very interested and very fascinated with the group that you said that you have made contact with. And I was interested in knowing what did they relay to you any idea or give you any impression of what their life was like, their everyday life?
Oh, yes. I think the thing that most fascinated us was the family unit. In a world that we're living in with a 42% and rising divorce rate and one-parent families, we were fascinated to learn that they had units of five, for example. Three female, two male, that surround each entity that's brought into their solar system, or as they call it, their Jorpa. And by the way, there are five planets connected to this Ogata group.
I think they all get along well.
They get along exquisitely well, and I think we can learn something from them. If there is a major problem, whether it's ecological or social or whatever, if there's a problem, they have no problem sending the very best in the solar system to be helpful. Can you just see us doing that, Bill? I'm very impressed with the way
they fantasize about those things, Greta, but I don't know whether we could do that.
That's very interesting. On a distant solar system, that they would have a similar
entities who are able to be productive and still have one always there for the child, for the little person.
That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Are they born and do they transcend their physical or entity type life, energy life, or whatever?
There is a zero population growth as we understand it, and we're not very clear on it. When an entity departs, another one is brought in.
You know, the biotechnology of an advanced civilization is very difficult to describe if we don't have the language. And that's what they said to us. We have to talk to you in analogy, so we have to use analogs of what is on your planet. And when the biotechnology is more advanced or different, you really haven't got the analogs.
I see. I have one other question as well. Did they give you any insight into why we as a people seem to have such a difficulty in cooperating with each other, as you were and as many other callers were pointing out earlier, cooperating with each other in a sense for our own common good? Why is that so difficult for us?
Well, I don't know that they view it that way. What they did say to us was, you know, that they were most interested in our survival. Despite what man can do to man, despite nature's plan, there are 24-plus civilizations eager and willing to be helpful to this planet for its survival. So I think they have great hope for us.
Was your question, why do they find us so uncooperative with each other?
No, I was wondering, a civilization of people that have been observing our people for so long, I wondered if they have any, you know, insight into our character as to what makes us tend to be so, you know, we cooperate to a degree, but when you look at mass starvation and you look at the world and the situation that we're in, and we're threatening blowing ourselves up and polluting the streams and the lakes and the rivers, etc., why do we have such a destructive component to our nature?
Well, I think part of it is the youth of our species.
Uh-huh.
And part of it is the newness of our technology. The dominant species on the planet doesn't live within the ecological boundaries, but interacts and changes it.
Hmm.
And that's what's causing many of our problems.
Yes.
Let me take this in a different way because it's kind of fun. Dick and I were discussing the teacher and the philosopher, Krishnamurti, the other night, and we had just said that he had defined love as freedom from conflict. And in came one of the Ogata group, and she thought that was pretty good. Conflict was an excellent understanding of love. And then she asked the question, but with your species, how about freedom from fear, freedom from tension, freedom from stress?
Mm-hmm.
If a human can shake his fears, his tensions, his conflicts, his stresses, then and only then will he be able to get onto the same frequency with another human being and converse with that human being from the heart.
I
think that was a wonderful statement.
It was.
Love has to be an openness with the heart. Only then, you know, will we have something here on this planet. I think that that humans find that thinking starts usually with negative connotations.
Mm-hmm.
You think of something, if it's problematic.
That's true.
And that puts negative vibes out that have to be overcome.
Yeah.
But positive, you know, a positive approach lets the relationships or the jobs get done.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved what she had to say about that.
Yeah, I wanted to say I really did enjoy all of you. I enjoy hearing you both on the radio again, and I think it's wonderful.
Thank
keep
you.
Up the good work, and God bless all of you.
Thank you, Adonis.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Bob is on the line. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, hello, Greta, Dick, and Bill. The I had a question. Last Thursday night, 2020, had I believe it was Rama was his name. Hope this island it possessed this woman's body, 3,800 years old.
Ramsar, yes.
And I'd like a constructive analysis on that. Your opinion of her or that incident.
I'll tell you, Bob. The message of change that Ramsa gives out dovetails with the scenario we were given over a decade ago. That is cataclysmic events and not nuclear wars will be the big problem. Earthquakes, natural catastrophes are likely to occur. That goes right along with nature's plan. I like what Ramsa has to say about people finding a safe place to live and stockpiling food and being self-sufficient. So the actual message from whoever this entity may be, I think, is a right-on message. The question is, I think that you're asking is about Jay-Z Knight, who channels this.
Mm-hmm.
And she says in many ways what we do. She insists, hey, she's not a guru, she's not a savior, she doesn't want people moving in on her. The difference between us is she does run a very successful business with this work, and we do not. We work under a non-profit structure. I don't know what else really to say about
it. Well, I would like to ask one more question then. Is it possible that Bill, you're not going to like me for this, but is it possible that an entity can possess another body?
Certainly.
Oh, then it's... Uh-huh. Okay, well, I thank you both very, very much.
All right, thank you, Bob, for jumping in with that. We had Jay-Z Knight here one night, all night long. The ram did not come forth that night. She had been in trance, I think, three times that day, and that's pretty tough on her.
I think it's amazing altogether that she's able to, you know, have him come in on cue.